Welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast, where sales leaders teach you what's working for them and how you can build it yourself.
This episode of the Predictable Revenue Podcast is brought to you by SDR Pods. Learn how we can build you a fully equipped sales development team to execute on personalized multi-channel prospecting and book you more meetings at the link below. If and only if you pick your metrics very intelligently when it comes to a SaaS product, you can 10x your revenue and market adoption. I'm your host, Sarah Hicks, and today on the Predictable Revenue Podcast, I'm going to be chatting to an expert about how to price your SaaS product. He is the author of Price to Scale and is a SaaS product marketing veteran who has helped firms such as Narvar, Medallia, Helpshift, and FeedsEye differentiate their products, grow revenue, and win. He likes to write on all things product marketing and is a contributor to the Forbes Communication Council and ShareBird.com. He also features in ShareBird's lists of top 50 product marketing mentors for 2021. He has a master's in management science from Stanford University and a bachelor's in electronics and communication engineering from Delhi University. Ajit Guman, welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast.
Thank you, Sarah. Thanks so much for the nice, catchy intro and for my bio. Really appreciate it.
Of course, of course. We're very excited to have you here. Of course, as we mentioned, you're an expert on pricing SaaS products. And so that's what we're really going to dig into today. But before we really get into the tactical stuff, I'd love to hear how you even landed on that as an area of expertise.
Totally. So my area of expertise generally is product marketing. I've been doing PMM for across five different Valley startups since 2013. How I landed on pricing basically was to when I started fixing pricing for my current company. And as I started to do it, I realized that it was a little bit of an art. I called a lot of folks who had done pricing at other companies. I figured it out. And I realized that there was no book out in the market. Like, this is part of the reason why I wrote the book. And as I started writing and I just started interviewing more people, I basically developed a philosophy around it about what does pricing look like and how do you do good pricing? So happy to chat more about that. But some of my attempts at fixing pricing at my own firm led me down this path.
How interesting. Yeah. I mean, what a kind of badge for your credibility to say that you've actually written the book on this topic. That's so amazing. And yeah, I'd love to dig into some of those concepts that kind of made up your philosophy. To get kind of a foundation for this, tell me about some of the common misconceptions that people have about pricing a SaaS product.
Totally. This is a very good question. So one of the most common misconceptions is that pricing is very hard. It's not. What tends to happen is a lot of us go to either grad school, undergrad, business school, and you learn a lot of analytical techniques and you feel you have to be really analytical to do pricing. That is not really the case. Like, yes, you have to be a little bit analytical, but it requires a lot of first principles thinking. This mental block holds back product marketers, product managers, even CMOs from really thinking about this in a step-by-step fashion. Now, many of them do solve it in a simple fashion, but I think there is a lot of opportunity there. That's number one. Number two is a lot of us think of pricing as the price point. I'll get into conversations and CEO will say, well, you know, they didn't like the price point or that competitor charges more, but the customer still likes them. That to me points out a fundamental lack of understanding of where pricing sits in the hierarchy of things. Mm-hmm. So the way I see it, strategy comes before positioning. Positioning comes before packaging. And at the final point of offering your product to a prospect, do you say, well, this is X dollars per whatever unit metric that you charge. So most often pricing is really the price point is really the last thing that actually even matters, especially when it comes to software. Mm-hmm. But people tend to think, oh, well, it's the price point matters. And many folks will say, well, let's just increase the price point by 10%. That's not where most of the problems are. Most of the problems actually happen upstream in the pricing structure. And most of the value is also unlocked in the pricing structure. So those are two very common misconceptions when it comes to SaaS pricing or software pricing.
Okay, interesting. So a lot of SaaS leaders are overcomplicating the process of actually setting that price point and kind of trying to take, as you said, an overly analytical approach to it when really it is quite simple if you can break down those logical steps. And as you mentioned, those steps are this pyramid that exists. Right. And the foundation of that pyramid is not the price.
Exactly.
Tiny triangle right at the top is the price, but everything else before that leads up to the price. And I suppose that would make it a more logical an easier path to take. And then the landing at that price makes sense once you've kind of ironed out all the pieces below.
100%.
Cool. Well, I really want to dig into the kind of pieces of that pyramid that guide us to that top. But before we do that, because you mentioned you've helped about 5 companies with this type of thing in particular, with product marketing, what are some of the common questions that people ask you about pricing, seeing as you are the one who wrote the book on pricing SaaS products?
Well, the most common questions from a company standpoint, the first set of questions is why is this important? Because it does tend to be an area that's sometimes neglected. And you know, the answer there is leverage. If you are able to better align pricing with prospects, many of the times that can lead to considerable increases both in revenue and sales efficiency, and sometimes at the same time. So that's one. It gets us a better sales engine that's more aligned with your market. Sometimes the question is, well, should we do it in-house or should we find a consultancy? I would say when a company is really big, they'd probably find somebody to hire anyway. So when you're small, that's when you're kind of figuring this out. My POV, which is different from, let's say, what a consultant would say, is try to do as much of the thinking in-house, and execution in terms of pricing operations can be done later on. And the other misconception is people think, well, we'll just do it over a weekend and then they'll figure it out. And I've seen blog posts of CEOs on this topic, right? We will just figure it out. You know, we're pretty cool. The point is that really pricing, it's not really in the strategy that pricing really, like, companies falter that much. It's in the execution. So we've discussed a lot of pricing strategy so far. The other piece of the puzzle is, if your sales team doesn't adopt it, if you don't have the systems built in to get pricing working, then you can have the best theoretical framework, but it won't really land. So those are some of the questions folks ask. These are the misconceptions, if you will. And then, you know, there could be more specific questions. As you learn about pricing structures, people will say, well, what's the best pricing structure? Should we have a 2-part tariff or 3-part tariff? Or should we have, should we price per user? Should we price per API call? But I would venture to say, if those are the questions you're asking, you're already on the right path. You're thinking about the right problems then. So I'm not really that worried when you're asking those questions.
Awesome. And you mentioned one thing was that obviously consultants who make their money from consulting would want you to kind of get an out-of-house opinion on this thing. Why do you think it's best if companies do this thinking in-house?
Yes, this is exactly why. So my realization as a product marketer and a marketer first is that pricing is really dependent on your positioning and how you're communicating the value of your product to prospects. Positioning and packaging are vehicles for communicating the value. And if the prospect understands the value, you can then set a price point. You can have an analytical framework for it. What tends to happen is that only inside a company do people understand your unique value proposition and positioning to the market. You maybe as a revenue leader or a founder or a marketer have the most empathy for your market. A consultant coming in from the outside is going to have a very robust portfolio of tools and techniques, but they're going to be very weak on your customer and your market and your value proposition. And as a result, my worry is that if they don't understand that well, the problem they will solve for a local optima rather than a global optima, which is like a mathematical term. But that's why I feel like the root, you have to solve it from the root, and you are the owner of your, you know, company's root cause.
Right. Got it. So the consultant is sort of fixing the symptoms. And if you do it from the beginning, then you're tackling the whole issue and kind of, as you said, kind of taking it from, or tackling it from the root, getting right deep into the issue rather than just a surface level solution.
Totally. Okay. Now, it can work that you realize what you need to do, and then you bring a consultant in and you say, solve this specific thing for me. I think that's very fair. But if you try to wholesome, just say, hey, I don't understand this, you take a look. That's where they are incented to make money for consulting, not necessarily really being the CEO, which is the problem in software, and Naval Ravikant talks about it, this is the principal agent problem. Principal agent mean you as the person who has most equity in the company or more equity in the company will have the more motivation to solve it from the ground up.
Right. Absolutely. Well, that's a perfect segue because I would like to talk about how to solve this from the ground up. So talk me through each of these, pieces of the pyramid that you have to go through before you can make that pricing decision.
Totally. Sounds good. So I sometimes go back to this movie, Wolf of Wall Street, where there is a scene between Matthew McConaughey and Leonardo DiCaprio. And Matthew McConaughey is saying, hey, it's a fugazi. It's all fake. It's fairy tale. You know, it's pixie dust. To a certain extent, the first part is a fugazi per se. Like the idea is that your product value, you can create an ROI calculator, you can create 10,000 things, but the value resides in the mind of a prospect. Mm-hmm. And as best you can, create a good brand, as best you can create a narrative and a positioning for your product and the set of features, that's where the value is really even established. The pricing is just to extract a portion of that back to your company. So it all starts with positioning. Now we pay more for iPhones, we pay less for Android phones. It's a positioning in our mind. And sometimes if you look at paper feature to feature, they're many times very similar in terms of feature sets. Mm-hmm. That's why I kind of focus, like, make sure that you have a confirmation within the company that you understand the customer, you understand their pain points, and you know how you are uniquely solving their problem better than competitors or alternatives. And that's the fundamental key. Making sure that you're all on the same page and you understand that well will help you set you up for the next two rungs on the ladder.
Right. And how do you think you best find that out? Like, is this when you're building that product, when you've got the idea in your mind and you're like, okay, I think I see a need for this type of product in the market. Right. Do you go out and find potential customers and talk to them? Like, how do you confirm that? I think a lot of people maybe think that they have this down, like to think that they have their product market fit nailed, but how do you go out there and make sure?
Well, initially there will be, now this is very early startup phase, right? These problems won't be in mid stage or late stage startup. So we are talking, this problem only exists in early stage. Mm-hmm. And the way to know that you're not having the problem is once your sales is repeatedly selling the same type of solution to the same type of customer. If you are able to get to a place where you can say, this is my ICP, e-commerce companies between 40 million to 70 million in revenue, selling to VP of e-commerce, this is the product that we are selling. And now your sales team can repeatedly do it. Then you know you have fit. Mm-hmm. If you're not able to do it and you're patchy, you can't define your ICP, you are getting a manufacturing, furniture company the one day and an apparel company the next day as customers, then you know you don't have fit. The best way to get fit, there are many ways. You can do a survey. If your market is really broad, let's say you're a Spotify, then you'll have to do surveys to figure out what fit is, perception, awareness. Mm-hmm. If you are a B2B company, then you can say, okay, this is my hypothesis. I think my target buyer is this VP of e-commerce person. I'm going to speak to 20 people in this hypothesis. I'm going to ask a series of structured questions. My book has actually a framework and a slide deck and a link to that as well that anyone can download. So if you go through the set of structured questions, then you'll get answers and you can then validate, are we on the right track or not? Are we solving the right problem? And then you'll know how they look at the world. Do they think of you as an option to solve this problem? And who else solves this problem? Many times there may not be a direct competitor. Many times there may be internal resources that you are navigating against. Now I would probably position this as, these are not really pricing things. These are basics of GTM strategy, basics of positioning. Yes. So all I'm advocating is let's fix the basics first because they are important to fix everything downstream.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, we'll say we've done our due diligence there. We do have confirmation. We've got the fit. And so we've passed that first run. Take us up the ladder.
So the next step up the ladder is packaging. And packaging is the simplest example is think about a Mustang car. There are many versions you can get. You can buy the car, the four cylinder car that anybody can, or not anybody, but at least the majority of the population can buy. Then on the top is like this bullet Mustang, or the Mustang that harkens back to the 1970s, 1960s models. Mm-hmm. And these are really expensive cars. So what companies are doing is they're looking at all the market and they're saying, well, for this set of population, this is how much they can pay, and this is likely what they will be happy with. And then there are these unique niche customers that are going to want something more, and they have the willingness to pay as well, right? So you can kind of draw a curve. And this is what SaaS companies do. They say, we have a pro plan, we have the platinum plan, we have the elite plan, and so on. Mm-hmm. And the idea is that you maximize your revenue capture from the market. Now, from a car company, it's a little bit maybe harder because you have to make all these special parts. For software, it's super easy because you're literally almost giving the same product away at a much cheaper price for a more of a consumer or SMB segment. And you are adding in some enterprise features, let's say like security, HIPAA compliance, SOC 2 compliance, more advanced capability of enabling larger teams, maybe analytics. And you're saying, well, this is my enterprise package. Now I'm generalizing. Of course, it's not going to be that simple. Right. But software gives you a lot of flexibility to create that curve and create those packages. And some counterintuitive things happen. If you provide too much options and too many options to a particular segment, they may not even resonate with your plan. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to an SMB customer and you have all these enterprise features, you will find in customer interviews that even if the price is right, they're like, oh, I don't need all this. This is too complicated for me. It adds more friction. On the other hand, you may go to an enterprise customer, and if they don't see certain features checking the box, they're not even going to talk to you. So it's about, this is about communication rather than features or product. Features or product are can be built, but if they're not communicated properly and the package is not created, that when you offer it to the customer, they don't see the value in it. I mean, what I'm saying is it has to resonate with them. Like they have to say, well, yes, this is what I was looking for. I want to solve this problem. And these are all the things I want. And these are exactly the things I want to solve the problem. That's the magic of packaging. And packaging is where I feel like fewer companies pay attention. They kind of just do this process very fast, but there is a lot of value to gain in packaging. Packaging done well gets people to really understand that you've nailed and solved their problem well.
Right. Absolutely. So is that something that you would get, go like you give a first attempt and you try a certain package and you see what resonates and then you right. iterate, or is it something that you think you can kind of map out and follow some kind of formula and nail the first time?
I think everything is iterative in something like this, but I can provide like a simple rubric. So if you are an enterprise company, let's say you're only going to Fortune 100 enterprises, and there you may want to have really modular Chinese menu type of approach. So you may want to modularize the product by the use cases, then give certain all of these use the product features, the group of features that solve these use cases, different names, and then create a not that big list, but still a sizable list that your sales team can then take to the customer and almost like, hey, you know, I think this is good for you. This is not, it's like a very bespoke experience, mm-hmm. but it is still modularized such that every set of capabilities in your product speaks to the problem being solved rather than a feature name that you've kept internally.
Right.
That's one. But if you have a large market, let's say you have enterprises, SMB, commercial clients and all that, then you may want to have more simpler pricing structures like a lot of SaaS companies have nowadays. Like it's called good, better, best. You have a platinum plan, elite plan, pro plan, and you try to kind of, you already know you're only going to have three packages. So you segment all of your features and then you go test it with the market and you build representative examples of who to test it with and see what they have to say. So this rubric may help a little bit, at least that's how I approach it. But the basic idea is packaging is really about communication.
Absolutely. Makes sense. Mm-hmm. Okay. So we've got our fit. We've got the packaging correct. What's up above?
Now, next is the pricing, right? And the pricing isn't also directly going to the price point because there are a couple of things you have to figure out. For software, especially in the subscription software world, we have pricing metrics. So in the olden days, you used to have perpetual license models for software that was on-premise. Now everything is on the cloud. You can charge per seat, you can charge per API call or whatever, depending on the type of software you have. And it's a very conscious decision one has to take because it has a huge implication on the revenue you get. And I'll provide an example. So the company I was working last was, the company's name is HelpShift. And I was speaking with the head of revenue who had said the original pricing structure. I'll explain the importance of this. So HelpShift was a customer service product for more for companies that had mobile apps. Now, had the company initially executed a pricing model that was like the Zendesk of the world, which would be $100 per agent or something, they would have not made that much money because there are very few agents for these digital mobile apps or customer service agents, but they have millions and tens of millions of users, especially in the gaming space. So that revenue, that would not have been that successful. Instead, what they did is they said, well, we're going to charge per 100,000 MAU. And by aligning the pricing metric with the number a product manager in a gaming company would look at, they were able to get 10x more revenue than they would have gotten in the customer service world. Now, it really depends on your unique positioning, again, and your differentiation to be able to support it and then to be able to convince your prospect. But I would think deeply here. Because if you think deeply, you can maximize more value and align it better to customers. A lot of companies later down the road have difficulty. So Mixpanel changed their pricing model from events to monthly tracked users because events seemed very vague to customers. Now, Mixpanel was very successful for a long time. But after some point, customers were like, well, we don't know what events mean. Sometimes we have more, sometimes we have less. How do we know we are being successful? Then once they aligned it to users, they're like, well, yes, we can justify it now because this is how many users we are supporting. Right. So super fundamentally important piece is the pricing metric.
Okay, absolutely. It's almost tied to the value that the end user or the customer provides, rather than it being like, you're going to pay us this set piece of money based on what we're going to do for you.
Instead, it's like,
you're going to be this successful. And as you're that successful, we'll align with that.
Exactly.
It seems like less money maybe too. And it adds up to more, but initially there's maybe not the sticker shock of like $100 per user. I don't know.
Totally. Yeah. And the confusion is less too, because they don't have to do math internally. They just know, well, okay, this is how successful we'll be. It helps your sales motion, sales efficiency as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And it doesn't feel so much like a fixed price as like it's dynamic and it changes with you. And it really does feel, it feels it aligns way better. Very interesting. So how do you go about finding the best metric for your SaaS product to price against?
It's about, like I would say, it's about empathy and user and customer interviews. So all I'm saying is just don't make a rush decision, because a lot of companies tend to say, well, it's just price per user because everybody does it this way. The only argument I have is to not make a dogmatic decision and just take a look at how your customer, the only question to ask is, how does your customer justify the spend that they're going to make on your software? What are the business value that they are going to talk about? And ideally, you try to align it to that as much as possible. Now, sometimes tracking is an issue. Instrumentation on the product can be difficult, especially for companies who are moving to subscription-based. But just ask the question, how is my customer going to justify the value at the end of the day?
Okay, interesting. Now, taking a bit of a left turn here, something that I always think about when I go onto a website of a SaaS product and I see, you know, the SMB, they've got pricing, and the enterprise, they say, contact us. Or sometimes you have to contact them for all the pricing.
Yeah.
How do you feel that demonstrating the pricing on the website factors into this value that you're creating, or the empathy with the client, or what's the impact there?
Totally. I see, it's very interesting because I see every other week a blog post from a marketer. Not a blog post, but a LinkedIn post from a marketer saying, stop hiding your pricing, publish your pricing to everybody. I'm sorry. Like, I think there is a lot of dogma. There are a lot of different type of companies, and different approaches help different companies. So if you are a traditional enterprise software company where you're just selling to Global 2000, I see little value in publishing pricing because of a simple phenomena called price discrimination. You're selling to airline industry, hospitality, financial services, retail. Everybody has different amounts they're willing to pay for a solution like yours. They may have different competitive sets. The moment you publish pricing, you pigeonhole yourself because the financial services company could probably pay you 5 times more money for the same product. So the point of price discrimination, you lose that leverage. And when you have such a low sample size, like if you have only selling to 2,000 companies, it's not about say, you're not a company that's about sales efficiency. You're a company that's about high revenue and high margin. On the other hand, if you are like an Intercom or you're like a Zendesk, or let's say even if you're a SaaS consumer product like Spotify or YouTube Premium, at that point, you're not about high margin. At that point, you want as much of the market as you can get. Then you publish your pricing so that you reduce friction in the sales process and you make the sales process go really fast, because it's not a negotiation. You just like buy the product or don't buy the product. Mm-hmm. So that those are the two ends of the spectrum. And as a company, kind of have to decide where you land. Now, there are middle paths. You can publish a pricing page with just packaging and say, contact us. And you can still provide some sort of a idea that, hey, I solve all of your needs, but contact us for pricing. But all I'm saying is, it's not a simple decision. It depends on what your market looks like and what type of company you are.
Right. So you've got to think about the type of sale that you're making. Like you mentioned, this like transactional, potentially even like salesperson free type of sale, like Spotify, where the consumer just makes that decision themselves. No problem. Yeah. Post the price, let them do it. No issues. Right. But if it is going to be a more consultative sale, and you know, you've got to do a little persuasion, a little convincing, and you've got to show the value through the sales process, probably better to make sure that you do get the opportunity to speak to everybody rather than, as you said, like alienating a group of your potential market, because they'll 100%. Just look and be like, no, we can't afford it. When in reality, maybe they can if the value 100%. Is positioned.
Totally. There's also a very interesting concept of a Veblen good. And the concept basically says that, let's say you're selling a product for $10,000 for one industry, and tomorrow you go to the government. They may not even consider you an alternative at that price point. Because the concept goes like, they are only used to seeing things in the millions of dollar ranges. So sometimes having too low of a price point may even get you excluded from a conversation.
Right. So they'll just believe, well, they can't possibly cover all of the needs that we have at that price point. Yeah. So better to give them like a great fun surprise at the end of the sales process when the bill is only $10,000.
Yeah.
That's great. Very interesting. Okay. I want to talk about SaaS pricing from the perspective of the sales team or from the revenue team. Mm-hmm. What do you think that looks like as far as compensation goes? Because we've talked about a couple of the different types of models that you can have now for pricing. Right. What do you think the impact is on the revenue teams?
There is a larger, I would say there is a problem that is emerging between old world pricing that was more of license-based pricing, perpetual licenses model, versus this new sort of land and expand motion. What tends to happen is that the land is not that big. The land could be for an account that grows to 100,000 ARR, you may be landing at 20, 25K. And then the customer success team is doing a lot of the work to grow the pie. The question that then comes to play is, how do you align incentives between sales and customer success to make sure the customers are happy? Because the sales team is going to be incented to just get the customers in, and are they the right fit so that you can actually go grow the expansion motion, or will they churn out sooner? So that's a very SaaS company problem. As we're moving to SaaS, I do think the sales team should have compensation tied to the overall growth of the account, because then they will check in on the account, they will make sure their problems are fixed, they will not oversell. And so I think that compensation issue has to be looked at a little holistically between both the sales team and a customer support team.
Okay. Do you see a future where maybe the sales and customer success roles are, you know, one in the future for this type of SaaS company?
I do see, I'm not sure, but I do see the roles have gotten very closer together. Mm. Sales folks have had to be more consultative, really understand how the problems are being solved longer term. Customer success folks had to understand what sales cycles looks like. How do you even bring up the conversation of selling new features? Because they've been historically just more keen on just, you're happy,
just
I'm happy.
Retention and exactly. Like upselling, cross-selling, all of that.
100%. So maybe it depends on every organization, how the team dynamics form. But I've just observed in my career over the last decade that sales teams were very, I'm one and done. Now, at my current company, they're very conscious about how the customers is doing later on. And the customer success team is now, as a product marketer, they're asking me, well, how do I sell this? Train me on the pricing model, which is something CSMs of old were not that interested in the past.
Right. Yeah. So what do you think that training looks like? Is there kind of an idea you have of how we should, you know, give the customer success skills to the sales reps and vice versa?
I don't have a solution for this, but I do think I know what I have to do from a product marketing perspective. I used to look at only sales folks. I have to do sales enablement. Now it's really more of GTM team enablement, because the delta that I'm going to get from expanding customers, like after a certain point of a company's existence, you get half of your revenue from expansion and half of it from new sales.
Sure.
But if marketing is only focusing on sales enablement, you're missing half the pie. So it's, for me, it's a mental note. I need to train both teams and enable both pieces of the expansion. That's at least what I know I have to do. I think we all have to kind of rejigger the training process for CSMs. You have to rejigger sales process. Also, maybe it means that we're hiring salespeople who are a little different in background.
Sure.
Maybe this is not a challenger sale. Maybe this is a different type of salesperson that we're looking for. Maybe we need more salespeople in customer success teams.
Right.
So I don't have a clear answer, but I know directionally that's where it has to go.
Right. Sounds like the absolute first step before you can even begin to think of how to train them is first to just see the customer success and sales teams as one continuum rather than this divided set of two teams, which I think is interesting, because it feels that is, there is a shift happening that way from many sides of business and SaaS. I've spoken to a couple of people on the podcast, Jason Reichel, who works for Go Nimbly, which is a revenue operation software. Same thing. He was talking about, don't think of your like sales ops and then your customer service ops and your marketing ops. It's not, it's the same thing. It's revenue. It's all revenue. And you've got to, you know, create operational efficiency and a great customer journey across that whole thing. It's not
completely. Yes. That's exactly, also indicates the rise of revenue operations.
Exactly. Yeah. So it seems that this is a shift that is happening across, you know, kind of at the same time. And it's interesting that is the case. And I like what you're saying about, you know, looking at different types of salespeople, because I do feel there's a shift away from that. As you said, the challenger sale, that like traditional salesperson, the persuasive, the, you know, slightly pushy if we're talking about like the most negative sense, but it does feel that we're moving. We've got to be that consultative, authentic, pain point focused, like value driven, rather than just, you know, make the money and move on to the next one. So very interesting. Well, Ajit, it's been an absolute pleasure chatting with you. This is such an incredible topic. As you mentioned, you wrote the book on it. So there's not a lot of content out there on this yet. So I'm so proud that Predictable Revenue gets to be among the first to chat to you about this. It's very, very interesting. Tell our listeners a little bit about Price to Scale and where they can read it and all of that.
Totally. Yeah. So you can just go to Amazon, search for Price to Scale book. If you just search for Price to Scale, you'll get Scales. So just search for Price to Scale book, or just search my name, Ajit Kuman, and you'll find it.
Okay, awesome. And if people want to get in touch with you as a product marketer, if they want to learn more from you,
yeah, happy to just connect with me on LinkedIn, Ajit Kuman. I'm happy to discuss and chat.
Okay.
And thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate your time.
Yeah, of course. We'll make sure to drop a link to Price to Scale in the show notes, in the blog, so that you guys can check it out. Easy peasy. Yeah, Ajit, again, thank you so much. What a wonderful episode. And thank you all for listening to another episode of the Predictable Revenue Podcast. And we'll catch you next time.
Awesome. Thank you.
Bye-bye.